to the latest episode of the Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson, joined by my co-host Matt Fortuna. We're both atop Notre Dame Stadium after Notre Dame's 24-17 win over Cal. It was a lot. And I think that Marcus Freeman wore that on his face after the game for how stoic he was during it. It almost reminded me of like the Bob Knight NCAA tournament press conference where he's like, exactly what's my game face? And like he makes every face imaginable.
Yep.
But this one probably took a year off Marcus Freeman's life. But to get your first win after three straight losses, he would probably, if he was with us right now, say that was totally worth it.
Robert Montgomery Knight was not the first analogy I expected for Marcus Freeman after his win as a head coach.
I sort of, in my preview, noted how the season felt like it was on the brink. and to pull it back, they really needed something from everybody today. They need Drew Pine to get it in gear in the second half. They needed the offensive line to sort of play a little bit like the offensive line we thought it was going to be. They needed the defensive line to play a lot like the defensive line we thought it was going to be. And ultimately, that was just enough to get over the line. Hail Mary at the end that hit some Cal hands. I'm not sure who it was because we're 120 yards away in the other end zone. But it was exhausting. I'm not sure that Notre Dame figured out exactly who they are or who they can be, but I think they learned to sort of play within some of their limitations today. And I think a lot of that starts at quarterback, going to Drew Pine for his first career start.
Yeah, I don't know how much they figured out about themselves so much as, all right, we got that win under a belt. Like, there's this gray cloud removed from everything we do right now. We can move forward and go about the business of figuring out who we are. I mean, this game was something. I mean, from start to finish, it looked like it could have gone either way. Multiple times down on the field at the end there, Notre Dame looks like they clinched it, only to not have clinched it. Capped, of course, by a Hail Mary that eerily resembled Jim Harbaugh and Aaron Bailey for the old school NFL. We're in Indiana.
Got Bob Knight and Jim Harbaugh. Steelers
got Bill Cowher his first Super Bowl after a lot of big defeats. This one got Marcus Freeman his first win. After some tough defeats, I was standing down in the end zone during that final drive, and again, multiple times Notre Dame looked like they had, one, gotten their first turnover of the season, and two, close out the game. And both times, talking to a couple folks, they were just like, they did all the celebrate, watch, they're going to be on their toes, and Cal's going to drive down and tie it right now. They damn near did that. I don't know how resilient this team is right now, to be completely honest with you. Like, they kind of just seem to be out there playing hard and trying to come up with a win, but kind of desperate for something good to happen, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. Now, we saw them get after the passer all day. We didn't see them get home on the passer really till the second half, I felt. I thought a lot of Cal's big plays on offense for Jack Plummer, who's not going to be mistaken for Lamar Jackson, basically avoiding the rush, breaking a sack, and scrambling for 12 or so yards. I mean, he had a big one on fourth down on their second to last drive, and gave Cal more than a puncher's chance to win at the end there. It's funny, look at the stats now. Total yards, Notre Dame 297, Cal 296, which sounds fitting because it was the only matchup between top 20 schools as released by this year's U.S. News and World Report. And neither team played all that smart today. I didn't think a lot of dumb penalties on both sides, some questionable, some not. But it was an error-filled kind of comedy of errors out there this afternoon. And thankfully for Notre Dame, they escaped with a win. And you know, they've got their quarterback. Yeah. They don't have a choice, but he's 1-0, and they move forward from here.
Yeah, I mean, I'd throw the officials into the comedy of errors as well. I mean, I thought that the celebration penalty on Cal was incredibly weak at the beginning, but then also Cal hit a shot play right before that play that looked like the ball hit the ground. They didn't even take time to review it. Cal smartly gets up the line.
They got booed. They were the first off the field of the refs, and we're standing right in the tunnel. They got booed pretty heavily.
Understandably so. But I think if Notre Dame found something that it wanted to find opposed to accepting something that it is, it's that pass rush, six sacks. But I think where that factors in most is Jack Plummer finishes 16 of 37 for 184, under 50%. Notre Dame was second to last in the country in completion percentage against coming into this game. They They did not make quarterbacks uncomfortable in any way, shape, or form most of the first 2 weeks. When they did against Ohio State, C.J. Stroud was athletic enough to get out of it. They didn't do anything against Columbia from Marshall last week. So to hold a quarterback under 50% passing, and I get some of that is driven up by the end of the game when they have to throw on that final drive, but I thought they did a good job of making Plummer uncomfortable and not letting him settle into a rhythm even before that final drive. And that's something I thought that was going to be a calling card of this team this year. Hasn't played out that way, obviously. But to finally get there, I wonder if of all the things Notre Dame showed today that was good, if that's what can be repurposed the most moving forward to North Carolina next week and then BYU after that.
A different challenge next week. Drake May has looked unreal so far for the Tar Heels, but 60 total plays for Cal, 64 for Notre Dame, 4.4 yards per play for Cal, 4.6 for Notre Dame, both average 3.6 yards per rush. Again, about as even of a matchup as you can hope for. Actually, Cal won the turnover battle, but it was the offense. I'm hesitant to say they found an identity, but they found something that worked. They got Chris Tyree involved, a guy we were all curious about through the first 2 weeks. Where is he? Why isn't he playing more? Logan Diggs came down with an illness this week, according to Marcus Freeman. Independent of that, I just thought they needed to get Tyree more touches. I don't know, maybe if he wasn't feeling all that hot the last 2 weeks, but he was their offense today. I mean, 64 rushing yards on 17 carries. Team leader in receiving, of course, 44 yards on 5 carries. Top two receivers, Chris Tyree and Audric Esime. Not what you want to see, but, like, it worked. I mean, they had that go-to almost late-developing screen pass in motion to either one of those guys, kind of dinking and dunking their way down the field that they were able to essentially rely on until they had to run the ball between the tackles and run off the clock, which they weren't able to do and haven't been able to do really all throughout this season. But they got something going. Drew Pine did not play great the first couple drives. There was one drop that was not his fault by Lorenzo Styles, but it was between Tommy Rees going viral for doing his best Brian Kelly impression on NBC, it did not look good. But they found some form of comfort offensively that was just enough to put them in position to win the game, ultimately win the game. And frankly, they should have closed it out sooner than they did.
When you say they found something that worked offensively, I feel like it's the
today. It worked today.
Yeah. I feel like what they actually did was they stopped doing stuff that didn't work.
Right.
They finally got away from stuff that was broken. In the second half, Drew Pine was 10 of 11 for 93 yards. Pretty much the entire passing game went through the running backs, all within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, a lot of it behind the line of scrimmage. Is this like, it's not a great offense. I don't think it's going to be at any point this year, but that doesn't mean it can't be a functional offense. And I think if you marry that mm-hmm. with a pass rush that feels legitimate to me after today, if you can get those two things working in concert, then I think you can talk about, like, they're not going to the college football playoff for the New Year's Six, but, like, we could talk about them as, can they go 8-4? We can talk about them. Can they compete with Clemson and USC at the end of the year? Which is, like, I get it. This is probably sounds a little hyperbolic after 24-17 against Cal. But I do think there are some things that will travel moving forward defensively because they're good and finally showed it. And offensively, not because they're good, but they understand how limited they are and can sort of – they know themselves offensively after today, I would hope, at least in the second half. And even though Marcus Freeman said, like, that's something for this week, I don't think that's true. I think that's something for the rest of the season because I'm just not sure there's much else out there when you look at the box score and you see Lorenzo Styles, 3 catches – 29 yards. Brayden Lenzie, 3 catches, 20 yards. Matt Salerno, 1 catch, 4 yards. No Tobias Merriweather. Jaden Thomas played but was not a factor. They just don't have anything at receiver, and I don't, other than Styles, and I don't know where or why that would suddenly pop up the rest of the year. Nor do they have a quarterback who has the arm strength to push the ball vertically like last week. Tyler Buchner was 1 of 7 on throws of 20 yards or more. I don't know if Pine attempted a throw of 20 yards right. or more. And I wouldn't expect that he's going to attempt more than one a game, to a game, and that would be more out of desperation than out of strategy. So it's, you know, Reese, I thought, if you could say an offensive coordinator called a good game when you score 24 points and had 297 yards and you were dropping F-bombs on your quarterback on national television, I thought Reese in the second half had a good game. First half, I think he was still kind of mucking around with everybody else here to try to figure out, okay, what actually, who are we? What can we get? What can we do that actually works?
Agree. It was a really ugly first half. I mean, they took them until the second quarter to get their first down. They got very Bronx cheery from the crowd. Just kind of people were fed up. I mean, they had four false start penalties on third down alone in the first half, including one by Lindsay, the receiver you mentioned. Michael Mayer, Cal took him out of the game. Good on Cal, except for that one touchdown where he was wide
unforgivable,
open,
but, frankly. Yeah,
that was unforgivable. But two catches, 10 yards. You look at that, if you're Cal, you're thinking, boy, we did our job right. If we hold Notre Dame to 150 yards passing, you're probably thinking we did our job right too. It was, I mean, we forget about some of these little moments right now, particularly in the first half, but Notre Dame misses a 45-yard field goal attempt, I think, to get on the board. There's a offsides call that I did not have volume on. I saw the replay. Unless the guy had lined up too close to the line, and I don't think he did. And by all accounts, everyone who watched the game said he didn't. Like that resulted in 7 points in Notre Dame. And,
right.
Their first touchdown in the second half came on a boneheaded targeting penalty by a Cal linebacker.
Oh my goodness.
On third down. I mean, the play was. Cal had him stuffed, and
yeah, the ball was out of Drew Pine's hands and going out of bounds.
That's what's the extra? That's 10 extra points, right? I mean, or yeah, 14 extra. I don't know, I can't do math anymore. They would have got a field goal out of that, but I mean, 11 extra points because that was a 7 they ended up getting on the front end, 4 on the back end that they probably didn't deserve. And then Cal does him a favor by calling a timeout with 4 seconds left when Notre Dame's in punt formation at midfield. And instead of just like putting Pine in there to heave it up to the end zone and make something out of nothing, they elect to actually punt it. Again, that got so like buried down on the list of things that ultimately didn't matter in this game that we didn't ask Marcus Freeman about it. But I mean, just being around the press box, texting with fans, obviously seeing a lot pregame here, like the culmination of pregame to halftime. Like, it was just a very not great mood around here. I don't know how else to put it.
Obviously, no, it was very tense. Win,
but yeah.
Like, I think that both of us probably picked that up before the game.
Right.
Like, I don't think we've been to many games between unranked teams. I'm talking about the AP poll, not US News and World Report, where there was so much tension in the stadium.
Right.
Like, it felt like there was everything to lose for Notre Dame in a season that, like, has already gone off the rails in terms of the college football playoff. And I thought, you know, speaking of that, one of the most interesting things said after the game was from Chris Tyree when he was talking about the relief of winning. You know, does it sort of like let you guys exhale for a little bit? And he said, I think the quote was like, last year we took these W's mm-hmm. for granted, which I thought was probably more insightful than he wanted to
right.
be. But it said something about just sort of this program believing in its own sort of like natural ability to just like make these games happen and figure out a way to muck your way through them and win. Cause God knows they did that a ton of times under Brian Kelly. And then you start the post game media with Marcus Freeman saying winning is hard, which is like the ultimate Kelly. I mean, it's on t-shirts.
Was I with you? I mean, they're walking out the field. I turn to someone and I go, oh, I'm sure we'll get a winning is hard like we would from Brian Kelly after one of these. And sure enough, the first thing Marcus Freeman says is winning is hard. I mean,
it says something about where Notre Dame was. Like this kind of game, for how painful in some ways it was a game that Notre Dame would automatically win under Brian Kelly 42 out of 42 times.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a long way to go to sort of earn that belief, earn that sort of self-confidence again. You just don't get to have it because you want it. And I don't know if today really gets you very far down that journey, but it sort of it arrests the slide that you were on where, man, you start questioning everything. And I think that's, you know, 0-3, maybe you're talking about the locker room having some fissures in it about why isn't the offense delivering, you know, guys looking ahead, guys thinking about what, you know, where their roles are moving forward. So to be able to put that all to the side and, you know, see if photos post game of, you know, Drew Pine sort of screaming into the locker room, to sing the victory march for the first time. All that is significant. Like, you can't, otherwise you can't win until you stop losing, or you can't lose. I can't not lose until you win. I don't know what the saying is, but like, it's, God knows for Notre Dame, it's better than the alternative, which, like, I'm not sure how much they could have taken a loss like today after the way the season started.
Well, and with who's on deck, I mean, I'm sure you, as well as me, everyone I talked to and saw pregame had some variation of, we better win this one, because if we don't, when the hell are we going to, essentially? Right. And that's eliminated as a question, at least in the short term. Carolina's got a hell of an offense, and that will be a challenge in its own right, although they haven't played all that well defensively. And I think, you know, getting a win under your belt and building this offense around Drew Pine throughout the course of the season will give you something to build off. Freeman post-game was just, yeah, he was probably more colorful than he intended to be. Like, it was good for us as far as, like, you know, he said, I'm only going to focus on the positives. You know, he got asked about still not forcing a turnover, and he rolled his eyes like, I know, can I catch a break? He got asked about what's going on through his mind on the Hail Mary in the final drive, and he's like, a conversation between me and God.
Like, and then me and myself.
And
J.D. Bertrand.
J.D. Bertrand after, and he's like, oh, yeah, and I got to focus on the game. It's hard. Like, intentionally or not, like, you got a that was about as unfiltered and as direct a glimpse, I think, as any of us will get with cameras present into the mind of a guy who's never done this before.
Yeah.
You never get that from Brian Kelly, at least after year three.
No, I mean, you would sometimes, but then it felt like an act.
Right.
I think that it was much more unvarnished and authentic with Marcus Freeman, which, like, for better or worse, is sort of his default setting. He looked exhausted, not in a, like, where are you going to find the energy the rest of the season, but just like, wow, today took a lot out of me, which I totally get. Coaching with the weight of the world on his shoulders today.
He's, you know, the last one out going through the tunnel as they win. And we're all standing there and the fans are going crazy. Coach, congrats. Well, he didn't even break stride, didn't even look up, give a high five. It was like, get me out of here. I got that W. We got a lot to work on.
Yeah.
This is not a time for celebration.
Another tunnel scene, similar reaction was Tommy Rees going up the tunnel. Somebody said, you know, great game, Tommy. Nothing. No response at all. I think for him today, man, we were talking to some people before the game. Not that there's ever more pressure on the OC than there is on the head coach, but today was about as close as you're going to get between the two of them because, I mean, Rees is, it's been a struggle. Not only has the offense played poorly to date, you lose your starting quarterback that you were trying to build around for so long, and you got to sort of reinvent who you are in a week's time. This was a big answer the bell for Tommy Rees, which he did in the second half, did not in the first. But I got to think if you're Rees, you feel like, okay, at least I found something. It might not be the offense I want to call, but – damn it, like, we've got something that works for us now, and before today I didn't know if we did.
I mean, he was trending in the first half, which is never a good thing, especially if you're a Notre Dame coach. He was trending for the same reasons Brian Kelly would usually trend. Like, you know, NBC caught him in a moment of frustration, and thankfully for him, he's you know, got that currency in the bank with Drew Pine, who's comes out there first thing. He was on his phone, Drew Pine was. When a couple other players were talking, when it was his turn to talk, he got asked about Tommy. And he's like, oh, I saw that video. And he was able to laugh it off. And he's like, I told him from Sunday on when I knew I was going to be starting, I want you to coach me as hard as possible because that's what I respond best to. And based on what we saw on the field today, that's true. But you do worry about Rees in the sense of, like,
mental health.
Well, like, not to be a dead horse, but, like, you know, no Notre Dame fan will ever see Brian Kelly through, like, a clear-eyed perspective. And I completely get that. It was a very ugly ending. But even when he was here, and even, you know, whatever good things he does at LSU, like, he's put himself into a corner publicly where, like, he's always just going to be, like, not a meme, but, like, no matter what he does right, no matter how many games he's winning, he's still going to be like Brian Kelly, and people are going to get a laugh out of whatever he does. I'm not suggesting by any means Tommy Rees is at that level yet, but, like, he's become public enemy number one on the fan base because there's always going to be a target, and he's been the OC, and he's familiar with this place. And to see that scene unfold on national TV in the middle of what was a very poor performance in the first half, I just worry about that becoming an unnecessary storyline for him in this team. And because they won and because Drew Pine came out and played the way he did and said what he said, I don't think that is an issue. But it's one more thing that's like all the naysayers are going to monitor in a season that hasn't gone according to plan.
Yeah,
so far.
There's certainly a lot of like I think the fan base is sort of like waiting for the next Reese slip up, like the next bad half, and then they'll freak out again and maybe he'll bounce back and like they'll shut up and then, you know, freak out again. And like I get the freak out because the offense looked very broken in the first half. Him working with Pine, I get it because you like Notre Dame should never have a quarterback who cannot hit Michael Mayer on third down over the middle. That should never happen at a place like this. And the fact that it was happening at the worst time, like I get why Reese lost it over the phone to Pine. Because that's like a much bigger picture story that I will probably be writing in the short term here about like how did Notre Dame get itself into this quarterback position? Because that's just not where big time programs are supposed to be. But, I credit, again, going back to like I give Reese credit for accepting what the offense was in the second half and figuring out a way to move it forward. Like there is no offensive coordinator in the country who just wants to call pass plays to the running backs and inside runs. Like nobody wants to do that. He's had much more creative play calls in the first couple weeks. Some have worked, some have not. Than the stuff we saw today. Today felt much more like, I don't want to say like damage control. That's not what it is, but it was
crisis management.
Yeah. Crisis management is what I'm looking for there. It felt like an acceptance of like, okay, we're not even close to who I want us to be, but we are sure as hell going to be 1-2 at the end of this day instead of 0-3 if I can help the defense out by holding onto the ball, by letting Drew Pine hit a bunch of short passes, by leaning into Estime and Tyree, the two running backs that they trust, I think, more than Diggs at this point, who's coming off the spring shoulder surgery. So I think it was a lot of just like, all right, this isn't what I want us to be, but this is what we are. So how the hell do we get over the line? And it, you know, you get over the line by the ball essentially falling off a Cal receiver's fingers in the end zone.
Do you think they would have gone for two if they got it?
Nah, Justin Wilcox doesn't strike me as like a risk taking head coach.
I'm indifferent. I like guys who are gutsy and will go for it, especially in an environment like this. I have no argument for or against it because with the way overtime set up right now, it turns into a game of 2-point conversion. So might as well end it here for better or for worse. But that's something we can ponder in another universe. And Notre Dame fans can ponder in another universe. I do think, we obviously had Mike Olick Jr. on our pod after week one. And, Notre Dame fans were making Tommy Reese kind of the target for the loss at Ohio State. I didn't really understand that, to be honest. Like, given what we knew about that offense, even before we saw all the bad things the last 2 weeks, and given what we knew about Ohio State, I didn't think really anyone was to blame for that. If anything, blame Al Golden for calling the double safety blitz on third down, which ended up deciding the game, so to speak. Last week, you lose to Marshall, I think anyone and anything is fair game. Like, blame whatever. Like, that's totally fair. But I do think, and we saw today, and we see it in the box score, the failure of this program to go out and get multiple extra bodies at receiver, even before Avery Davis got hurt. The failure to have another arm to compete in that quarterback room. And I know that is a more delicate balance when you've recruited the guys you've wanted out of high school. And if you bring in an outsider like you did last year, that outsider is only going to come with the intention to play. And if they don't play, that could cause a whole other set of issues.
Which worked, by the way, right?
Last year.
We have to acknowledge that bringing in the outsider worked just fine.
Oh, last year it did. But
there might have been some hurt feelings, but sorry, life in the big city here.
Who was hurt by last year?
No, just like Drew Pine's ego. He wanted to play, lost the quarterback competition. who was helped was the entire freaking Notre Dame football program by Jack Cohn being right. here. So.
But we're also talking about a true freshman, a redshirt freshman yeah. being the only guys in your room, whereas these guys this year further along and we're building toward this year. So I don't know if anyone was all that hurt by last year's situation. All three ended up playing a decent amount anyway, but we knew this would be an issue coming in, and watching it unfold live, you were talking about this earlier, Sturdivant, one of the best guys on Cal today.
Yeah, somebody in Notre Dame recruited, and they just, you know, they're like, well, we've got three receiver commits. Amorian Walker, who's now at Michigan, C.J. Williams, who's at USC, and Tobias Merriweather, who can't get on the field. So
I just don't understand it. I mean, look, Charlie Jones, I'm not saying Charlie Jones will go to Notre Dame, from my understanding, like that partnership, that friendship he had with Aiden O'Connell was real, and he always wanted to play with him, and he saw the opportunity to do it in an offense that obviously is very pass happy, a little bit more pass happy than Iowa and Notre Dame, which might be playing in a bowl game later this year between two teams that will go on until someone scores an offensive touchdown. I don't know how many people would pay to see that, but that's where, again, play calling is play calling. We all play Monday morning quarterback. You don't play well, you lose. Like, everything's open for second guessing. I'm much more concerned in the big picture, from a big picture standpoint, of like, how did Notre Dame get to this point with this roster? Because it's Notre freaking Dame. Like, that yeah. should never happen.
No. At receiver and quarterback, which is, I don't want to turn that into a crutch for people because, like, well, you can blame Brian Kelly for that if you want. Like, but
Kelly wasn't mining the portal this year Notre Dame when everyone in America was.
What the hell difference does that make?
Yeah.
He's not here. Marcus Freeman is. Notre Dame's 1-2. So, yeah, they're so either poor or undeveloped the offensive skill positions. It's hard to sort of get your head around why, quarterback, running back, and wide receiver. But it's like in Estime and Tyree, I think they have two guys that are good enough to shoulder the load there.
They had a functional offensive line. Yeah. Both would have 100 yards easily.
Yeah, but at receiver, they don't. At quarterback, they don't. So, you know, what does that get you the rest of the year? It probably gets you more to like a 7-5 final record. As you're sort of looking over the horizon here, but still they're going to have to beat some teams that are actually good to get to 7-5. Like, they don't have six more Cals. They have one UNLV. Maybe. They have one Navy. Everybody else can sort of get you. Boston College, probably not, because I don't know if Phil Dracovic will be standing upright at that point of the year because their offensive line is so bad. But look, Stanford.
You want to talk about worst case scenario, though. Phil comes in here and wins on senior day after Notre Dame's gone through all their quarterback troubles.
God knows I've covered that game before under the Charlie Weiss era with Cam Dantley and Zach Frazier. But it's like USC, Clemson, North Carolina, BYU, Stanford.
Syracuse.
Syracuse for sure now. Stanford. Like, that's
six. BYU lost by 21 in Oregon today.
But that's like 6-7 games that you're not going to be able to play like you played against Cal and win those games. You're going to have to find another level. Do I think Notre Dame has like another couple levels? Yeah. But this isn't a team like this team is not going to do what like the 19 team did, where I think Brian Kelly built, or the, I'm sorry, the 20 team did, where it's really kind of just awkward and funky at the beginning of the season, but it was all sort of building towards the Clemson game where they went all in on that one and said, basically just screw it. This is the game we got to go for it in this game. And they started preparing ahead of time for it, like the Pittsburgh game that year where they went out and just basically flexed because they knew they had to find another level, another two or three levels before they get to Clemson. Like, I don't even know what another two or three levels would look like. But I mean, to be fair to the situation, there are not a lot of teams that can find another two or three levels when they're playing their backup quarterback. That's just the reality Notre Dame's living in. While they should have a better quarterback room, when your starter goes down, your starter goes down. That's a hard place to be.
To quote Brian Kelly, this is who we've got. It's not the NFL. It's not free agency. We can't go out and sign someone and bring them in today. this is who they have. And like that 20 team was so mature. And
oh, yeah.
You knew that, you know, amid all the uncertainty of that world that year, you knew as soon as Kelly began his fall camp press conference and said, I'm not worried about this team. I know what I got with them. And then had the presence of mind to essentially talk about Clemson while beating Pittsburgh with multiple games there and basically saying, yeah, like we know what we're in for here. Like we know what we can do. Yeah, you're not going to see a team like that too often anywhere as far as the identity of it, the symbiotic nature between coaching staff and players. This is all new ground, entire new ground. You know, it was nice to see Manti Te'o here today.
Oh, yeah.
Got shown on the board twice. I think one time's too many because they needed the crowd to get livened up or something. And that's what got the crowd excited, seeing Manti Te'o. It wasn't the play on the field for most of the game, that's for sure. But it was good to see Manti. It was good to see him in a good headspace, to see him smiling, even joking with all of us about how he missed us and yada, yada, yada. I mean, it was cool to see. But, I mean, you talk about putting out all the stops. You talk about what would have happened had they not won this game. Here's a recap of Notre Dame in the headlines this week. Manti Te'o's back. New quarterback starting. Lou Holtz goes on some, I think it was a gambling podcast this week, and says he loves Marcus Freeman, but he's not sure if he's even going to make a bowl this year. They put names on their jerseys, which, of course, when you're 0-2 is going to be dissected endlessly. And news breaks of the coach converting
green jerseys.
Green jerseys. Well, we knew they were going to be green. We didn't know they were going to have names on them. News breaks of the coach converting to the school religion, which most of us knew it happened a month ago. And Freeman and people around him were very adamant about keeping that private. But I'm sorry, it's very, very funny that magically got leaked when the coach was 0-2 and needed every bit of goodwill he could possibly get from this fan base. And he gets a win on top of it.
There was, like we were saying, there was a lot today. today was multitudes to get Notre Dame to its first win of the season. I think that's part of the exhaustion, right? Like, it's not like Notre Dame just came out and we're like, let's just play better today. Let's execute better. No, you had all this extra stuff going on, which, like, Notre Dame has a tendency to do. There's always a lot of extra stuff here for one reason or another. Today was more than usual. I agree. It was cool to see Manti back here. I don't know if you were watching the video board, but like when he was introduced, presenting the flag, you know, he got emotional. You could see it. And then the fans actually took it up another couple levels with the cheers, and he got more emotional. So that was very cool. To sort of see him back on familiar ground after, you know, what the last 10 years have been like for him.
He said,
seems like he could have played today, frankly. I mean, he was still okay. He was in pretty good shape. Yeah.
But he said Marcus Freeman reminds him of Bob Yakko.
Yeah, that gave me.
I looked around when he said that to see if anyone
gave me
had the
shivers,
same reaction I did.
I was like, how do you say energy vampire in Polynesian? I don't really know how that works. But other than that, like, yeah, that was the feel good part of the pregame. I guess the feel good part of post game is just to sort of see Notre Dame's players and its head coach kind of exhale for the first time in 6-8 weeks. I don't know. Maybe since the first practice. I remember being at the first practice and Marcus Freeman getting on the team about how much work they had to do. And I sort of interpreted it as like, oh, you know, that's like something the head coach knows he's going to say after the first practice, regardless of what he saw. But maybe his powers of perception were on point that day and he knew how far this team had to go. But
do you think that though?
Not like, this far.
This does not resemble anything either of us heard throughout camp.
No. Notre Dame's staff was confident they were going to be able to move the ball on the ground. Their offensive line was going to be good. Their pass rush had a chance to be excellent. And then Tyler Buchner was going to be really good at quarterback, which really good is an overstatement of how he played the first couple weeks of the year. And then the Pine change up here is just not something, you know, would you say they didn't see it coming? Probably not. But did they know this was a possibility? Considering Freeman said, hey, Drew Pine, we know you're going to play this year. And Reese said, Pine, I need you to be ready. Like with the injuries Buchner had, you knew you were going to get to this point at some moment.
That's been Notre Dame football as long as you and I have covered it, right? Like very few guys have made it beginning to end of season in one piece, so to speak, or without major hiccups at quarterback. So I think Drew Pine is the perfect kind of makeup for this situation. He took losing the job very hard, but you know, Marcus Freeman said today, like, I think he used the term warrior. He said everyone can learn from the way he responded for this program with the confidence he's brought to this team, despite, you know, not being the starter entering the season. But I think this coaching staff grossly misevaluated. I don't know if it was the personnel, the talent, the demeanor. Like, this is not
just like the way the practices were structured. Like, what they were able to show in practice perhaps was not set up to be replicated in a game. I don't know.
This does not look at all like the team we were promised publicly and privately we would see.
That, I think, is that, you know, it's a much bigger question for Marcus Freeman, bigger picture question for Marcus Freeman down the road. Not something that I think that we would ask, and certainly not something we would get answered now. But like, I would think after the year, Marcus Freeman is going to have to take a step back and be like, how did I misread this situation in August? How do I create a training camp next year, create an offseason next year that is more informative and more accurate of what the program is? So then I'm not surprised when kickoff happens in Dublin against Navy, that I'm not surprised, you know, once the season starts and Ohio State comes here at the end of September. So that's right. That's probably a different podcast for another day. But I mean, for now, first one of the season, it takes, I don't know if it takes a lot of pressure off, but it definitely is a little bit of relief.
The alternative is not good.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't suddenly make you a great team, but it stops you from being the first coach to start 0-whatever. Yeah.
Three games, three different jerseys. If they got a fourth this year. If they went 0-3 in these, they would have to
throw the lost today. Year. I think it would have been only the second 0-3 start in program history. The other one being in 2007. Great. You don't want any comparisons to that stink. So you avoid all that. That's the big positive. That's real. That means something for Freeman. It means something for Notre Dame. It means something for the roster. So that's a takeaway worth taking away, I guess, is probably the best way to put that if you're Notre Dame right now.
Yeah. Chapel Hill on deck. That'll be
will you be sure. Joining me down there or no?
Don't think so. I think I haven't been home one weekend yet. I'm going to be home. I'm planning on being home this week. I want to see if I can make it work where I could do that and Clemson at Wake Forest. Mm. If one was at noon and one was at night. In the same state, it doesn't look like that's going to be the case. So I think I'll be watching this one from the tube. Which who's broadcasting for that?
Ooh, I think it's an ABC ESPN. I'm not sure who the broadcast team is, but it's a 3:30 start, so we're at least winning a little bit in that way. But yeah, so we'll wrap up this episode of the Shamrock from atop Notre Dame Stadium after Notre Dame's 24-17 win over Cal. Matt and I will be back during the week talking a little North Carolina, see where the program goes. I have a feeling that there will be. The drama of Notre Dame season did not end today. I don't know if it slowed down today. So
the misery ended. The drama did not.
We will have a lot more to talk about moving forward. So until then, he's Matt. I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of The Shamrock.